I am Iron Man. The suit and I are one.
I want to make Iron Man look like an antique.
Welcome to the official Plugged In podcast. I'm Bob Smithhauser. The year's most eagerly anticipated sequel rocketed into theaters last weekend, earning just shy of $134 million. Associate editor Paul Acey is here to venture beneath the shiny metal exoskeleton of Iron Man 2.
I'm right there right now, actually. Could you hand me that impact wrench?
Also in the studio is Meredith Whitmore to tell us about one of the most popular tween shows on TV, Nickelodeon's iCarly.
Hey, guys.
And parents, if you're still trying to figure out what to do with Miley Cyrus, stick around. We'll provide a little perspective on her controversial new music video. This week's program is sponsored by the Focus Leadership Institute. One semester is all it takes for college students to get a fresh, life-altering take on marriage, family, church, society, and comparative worldviews. Learn more at focusleadership.org. Before we move on to culture clips, we have a special announcement to make. For that, I am pleased to welcome the online editor at PluggedIn.com, Steve Isaac.
Good to be here, Bob.
Steve, something happened this week in the world of Christian publishing we thought podcast fans might like to know about.
Well, this week, Bob, the Evangelical Press Association issued their annual awards. The Evangelical Press Association has about 300 periodicals represented, different Christian ministries, organizations that create magazines and websites. And this year, they chose to give us the top award for online publication.
Congratulations. You know, obviously, this is not something that we're seeking. We don't do this for awards. It's really genuinely all about helping families, honoring God in our work. But it is always nice to be recognized, isn't it?
It is, especially after we spent a lot of blood, sweat, and tears
That's right.
on creating a new website, revamping the entire thing, making it better for our readers. To have that recognized in this way is significant. And it just shows the team that puts this together. It's a great team that we have here at Plugged In right now. And it's meaningful in that way. But as you mentioned, Bob, it's about the readers. We could get all the awards in the world if we don't have the readers come, the listeners to this feature. If you people don't come, those awards don't mean anything. But you're coming, you're learning, we're growing, and we're giving you hopefully what you need and what God wants us to give you.
Awesome. And of course, you wouldn't say this, but you've put in more hours, crazy hours, over the past 18 months than any of us. And so congratulations to you, Steve, and thanks for kind of helping us all keep pulling in the right direction.
Thank you, Bob.
And now, here's a little something we like to call Culture Clips.
So, Bob, how many parents do you think are friends with their kids on Facebook?
You mean percentage of people with accounts?
Sure, sure.
I don't know, about 75%?
You would be wrong, sir.
I hope it's more.
No, it's much less. 48% are friends with their kids on Facebook, which I think is a pretty fascinating stat. And that's according to an organization called Retrievo that did this poll. So in addition, apparently 29% of parents actually ban the use of mobile phones at the dinner table. Only 29%.
I would have thought that was higher, too.
You would think so.
And maybe I'm a little old school, because once we sit down and we say grace, it's family time. It's us and the food, and that's pretty much it.
Well, and you don't want to get the food on your keys anyway when you're typing out those text messages.
Well, interesting. So what would you recommend to parents? I mean, what does this say to you?
Well, I think it just says that parents need to be more involved with their teens' tech choices. And I think that that's really critical to become friends with your teens on Facebook or whatever social networking site they belong to, because so much of their lives are lived out on these social networking forums now.
Yeah, and to protect that time together.
Absolutely.
Even if it's just sitting at the dinner table.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Paul. Meredith, what did you find this week?
Well, the Social Security Administration comes out with a list of most popular baby names every year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hope that Bob was one of them.
Only in
Sorry,
the Plugged
Paul,
In department.
It wasn't. The number one boy's name is Jacob, and it has been for 11 years running.
Wow.
The number one girl's name, though, last year it was Emma, and Emma had reigned for several years. This year it was Isabella.
Isabella.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And there's another interesting point here. The name Cullen went up 297 spots and is now the 485th most popular baby name.
And what do all these things have in common?
These things have Twilight in common. And there's some speculation that the media has really affected people's choices in their baby. Not with Jacob, of course, but Isabella did get a spike. And Cullen definitely is a direct result.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Well, films can have a powerful influence. In fact, you guys may remember this quote we used before. Author Stephen King once said, "Movies are the highest popular art of our time, and art has the ability to change lives."
Yeah, but the poor Cullen. I mean,
well, you think that's bad? What's the name of the baby in the books? It's Renesmee or something like that.
I don't even know.
It's R E N E S M E E. If we see a spike in that name in the future, I think we've got some issues.
Yeah, definitely.
Thanks, guys. In terms of cultural impact, he's not Spider-Man, Batman, or Superman. Yet in 2008, director Jon Favreau recently put Iron Man on the map by casting Robert Downey Jr. as playboy industrialist Tony Stark. He's a different breed of hero. For one thing, unlike other comic book alter egos, Stark lets everyone know he's Iron Man. So as we open up the sequel, there's no secret identity in play, which, you know, Paul, that kind of creates some interesting dynamics, doesn't it?
It really does. You know, in fact, Tony Stark is really sort of the Lindsay Lohan of the superhero world. I mean, he's just everywhere. He would be on TMZ pretty much every week because he does such outrageous stuff. And one of the upshots is that he can't hide anywhere. The bad guys know exactly where to find him. And this movie has plenty of bad guys. You have a guy with a whip who's coming after him, an electric whip. You have an evil industrialist who wants to sink his business. And then, of course, you have the issue with his own suit that's poisoning him from the inside out.
Yeah, and actually it is that nuclear pacemaker that he's got.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
It's toxifying his blood.
Exactly. It's just sort of pumping these chemicals into his blood, and so he's slowly dying. And he thinks he has very little time left, which means that he starts acting out again. Yeah. You know, he starts acting up like a little child.
And the military wants possession of what they call a weapon. They want the suit. He doesn't want to give it up. So there's conflict there. Paul, I'm convinced one of the reasons that people really enjoyed the first film so much is they didn't have huge expectations going in.
Yeah, I think that's true.
A pleasant surprise. Not so now, though. Here we are in early May, and already this has to be the most anticipated movie of the summer. How did it work for you?
You know, I didn't like it as much as I liked the first one. And I think it was sort of that, some of that expectation factor. You know, the first one was such a pleasant surprise. This one, you knew what you were expecting. And this one felt just a little more rote. That doesn't mean that I thought it was unwatchable. I mean, it's still a superhero movie and it still has its moments of fun, but it's just what it didn't have the life that the first one did.
Yeah, as a popcorn flick, I thought it was entertaining enough. I personally enjoyed watching great actors at work. I mean, here you got Robert Downey Jr. plus Gwyneth Paltrow and villains played by Sam Rockwell and Mickey Rourke. So there's a lot of talent on the screen.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And some of that talent went underutilized. I mean, Robert Downey Jr. is great in everything that I've seen him in, quite frankly. But I think that Mickey Rourke was underutilized here.
Okay, let's talk to the parent of a 14-year-old boy. The film's rated PG-13 and he's applying pressure. But Mom, I'm over 13 and all the other guys are going to go see it. What should a parent know as they weigh that decision?
Well, you and I actually had some sort of differing thoughts on the movie a little bit in terms of its level of content. I thought it was a little bit better than the first one, and you thought it was a little bit worse.
I think it was more the amount. It seemed like rather than having that key, for instance, in the first film, there was the sex scene. And
sure.
You know, if you could have skipped through there, I didn't remember it being significantly problematic. But with this one, there's a lot of sexual innuendo, and it may not have been at the height of perhaps the sex scene in the first one, but there just seemed to be more of it. There were two bleeped, you know, profanities, extreme profanities that you didn't need any imagination at all to get, and a couple of misuses of lords. I mean, there's just some things like that bothered me.
Well, and like any superhero movie, you're going to have a lot of rock'em sock'em violence. I mean, there's a lot of just chaos that's going on here.
Okay, one of the things I liked about the first film, which wasn't perfect either, as we said, was the origin story. I mean, Tony Stark, he goes from callous weapons manufacturer to really a champion of the people because of a choice. I mean, here he's humbled. He had sort of a Damascus Road experience that literally changed his heart. And from that point in the film, he was a lot less self-focused. But in Iron Man 2, he's the narcissistic playboy again. He's ogling women. He, at one point, gets dangerously drunk in the Iron Man suit. So on a moral level, he's just not as heroic here as I was hoping.
Yeah, he almost regresses a little bit.
Yeah, what were your thoughts of that?
Yeah, you know, and he did regress. And I think that some of that is just because of the source material. The source material actually has him becoming an alcoholic. And so you have sort of this sense where in the second movie, although he was sort of redeemed in the first one, he needs to be redeemed again.
Yeah.
And he needs to make positive choices, which, he, as you say, he doesn't at the very beginning.
Well, we've got a clip of actress Gwyneth Paltrow, who plays Stark's loyal assistant, Pepper Potts. She's talking about why audiences love the Man in the Iron Mask.
I think the reason that Tony Stark is so appealing is because he's flawed. You know, he's funny and he's kind of a disaster, but he's always trying to improve himself. He's brilliant. He's a superhero. But he has that duality of, you know, that we all, I think, feel of, I'm not so great, but I am great. And, you know, it's interesting to watch him struggle with that and on his course to become a better man.
At one point, you know, maybe to help us relate to him again, we've got the spoiled rich guy. He's got to improvise with sweat and ingenuity to be restored. Paul, we also feel for Tony because of some family issues, don't we?
Yeah. We really learn that he's had a rocky relationship with his dad. And you get sort of a sense, maybe just sort of psychoanalyzing him a little bit, that some of his bad behavior is due to this relationship with his dad. But that comes around, and we learn that his father really did love him all along, even if he didn't really find a way to express it.
Well, what about Scarlett Johansson's character? There was a big deal about her being a kind of sexy role.
Well, she is in a sexy role. It felt like Scarlett Johansson's character is sort of a setup for the future Marvel comics coming to the big screen later on. But yeah, we definitely see her in lingerie. We see a lot of her.
Yeah.
And we see her kicking some definite bad guy keister as well.
Okay, so well acted, pretty entertaining, but definitely some content issues to be aware of that, of course, are detailed more thoroughly in your online review. Any final thoughts before we move on?
Yeah, you know, I think I personally really enjoy these superhero movies, to be honest with you, but they're always something that you need to treat with caution because they're always going to be a mixed bag, and parents just can't take this stuff for granted.
Okay, thanks, Paul.
He told me that he can beat his dad in arm wrestling, and I said, no way. And he said, oh, no, it's true. And I said, wow, you must be really strong. And he said, well, I work out a little bit. And I said, really? And he said, yeah, you want to feel my biceps? And I said, sure I do. And so I felt them, and they felt awesome.
Well, that's Miranda Cosgrove, who plays the title character on iCarly, the series that for the past 2 years has been voted favorite TV show at the Nickelodeon Kids' Choice Awards. It's about a girl who, along with friends Samantha and Freddie, create their own webcast and become celebrities, which seems to be a trend in kids' shows today, huh, Miranda?
It is. You've got Sunny with a Chance, and they have their own show within a show, and you've got Hannah Montana and her life on stage and off, and iCarly is no different.
It's like an obsession with celebrity. Almost.
It really is, and it's teaching kids that they can be celebrities too.
Yeah, that's something I remember when Adam interviewed Phil Vischer a little while back. He pointed it out and was really quite concerned about that. When I reviewed the show for Plugged In Online back in 08, it had kind of figured out a way to incorporate video clips submitted by actual viewers, which, frankly, that's kind of a clever way to get kids tuning in,
oh,
see whether or not they're going to be on the show. Did you find in the more recent episodes that you reviewed that they're still doing that?
You know, Bob, I watched 3 or 4 episodes, and I did not see that they incorporated it into the TV show.
Okay.
But the website, they were requesting videos, and they did have some fan-based...
A pretty significant online presence sort of to go
so
with the theme
still,
of the show.
They're still soliciting things from kids.
Okay, let's talk about some of the things the show does right.
I don't want to come down with a heavy fist here because a lot of it is played for laughs and it's fun and you do laugh and it's kind of lighthearted. But in terms of a message, it doesn't really have one. So, you know, some shows might have a moral. These really don't. Now, the characters care about each other. They're good friends. Carly's brother loves her and takes as best care of her as he can. He can't keep a goldfish alive, but
and he's sort of the parent figure. There are no parents in
there
that
are
household.
No parents, and that's another issue. Adults tend to be viewed as incompetent, and you know a lot of jokes are made at their expense.
Well, this is Nickelodeon. I mean, we've seen this before. And it almost seems that some of the edge that Nick shows have is to position themselves against the Disney Channel or you know, some of the tamer things. Do you feel that that's representative here in iCarly as well, beyond the parents? What other things should parents know about?
Well, in the episodes that I saw, there was just kind of an underlying message of mocking people who are different, mocking adults. There's kind of a just undertone of disrespect. And it's all softened with the lighthearted humor, but it's still there. And parents do need to be aware of it.
One of the challenges that I had, maybe the biggest one, was the character of Sam. I mean, she kind of comes from the Seinfeld school of cynicism.
She's a 17-year-old cynic, yeah.
Really snarky. Maybe an example would be in order here. In this clip, Sam is working the counter at a Mexican restaurant. She runs into a customer who's as cranky as she is.
Lady.
Yes, can I help you?
I said I wanted hot sauce, and there wasn't no hot sauce on my tray.
Sorry. Here's some hot sauce.
You should have put it on my tray in the first place.
You know where I want to put it right now?
You watch your mouth.
You watch your mouth before I put my fist
in
it.
Hey. You say you're sorry to the customer.
But I mean,
apologize.
I'm so very sorry.
Come. You want to keep this job?
No, but I need to.
Funny on TV, maybe, but not so funny when young children imitate that kind of smart-alecky behavior.
Well, you know, their target audience is probably 8 to 10 years old, and they're not marketing it at teens. If teens were watching this, I wouldn't have as much of a problem
right.
with it. But Sam's character is basically teaching these kids, oh, yeah, it's okay to be... to be rude,
to be disrespectful to adults
and other kids. It's okay to mock people. And, you know, she makes it look funny. And, of course, it's done for laughs. So it's teaching these kids, hey, Sam can do it. Why can't I?
And get a laugh in the process.
And, you know, other content, it wasn't so much a problem in the earlier years when they were younger. But now adults were... low-cut dresses, and so do the girls. I mean, mm-hmm. there's just a lot of cleavage shown, and high-cut skirts and short shorts, and it's just stuff I don't want to see personally. Yeah. And I know parents don't want to either.
Well, Jerry Traynor is probably the highlight of the show for me. He plays Carly's big brother, Spencer. He's a lot of fun to watch, Meredith. I don't know if you felt the way I did, but he's kind of got
he's funny.
Part Jimmy Fallon, part Jim Carrey.
Well, it's all slapstick, and he's made of rubber.
And he sells out to the physical comedy.
He
I really
does.
Love how he does that, and I think he's going to have a real career beyond iCarly.
I hope so.
Well, whether they come from Nickelodeon, the Disney Channel, or PBS, child stars all face decisions as they hit adolescence and try to sustain a career beyond the kid shows that made them famous. One celebrity who's been trying to have it both ways is Hannah Montana herself, Miley Cyrus. But it looks like those days may be over. Here's Plugged In Senior Associate Editor Adam Holtz with a little perspective.
Miley Cyrus' latest single, Can't Be Tamed, is meant to make a statement, trading Hannah Montana's innocuous pop for something that's anything but innocuous. Sleazy is more like it. Every guy, everywhere, Miley sings, just gives me mad attention, like I'm under inspection. I always get a 10 because I'm built like that. And then there's the video. In it, Miley is a bird with huge digital wings intended to be displayed before rapt audiences. But she and a retinue of dancers clad in black leather S&M style outfits break free, menace spectators, and then rise sensually with each other. I suspect many of Miley's adolescent fans can relate to the idea of feeling caged, but adulthood is defined by coming to terms with the fact that life doesn't revolve around you. Miley, in contrast, is determined to spread her wings and fly into adulthood as a sexualized creature, and she hopes her Disney Channel fan base will follow her lead. She told Ryan Seacrest, "You just have to say, this is what I want to do as an artist, and hopefully your fans, who are your true fans, will follow along. We hope not."
For more details, check out the track review of Can't Be Tamed in the music section at PluggedIn.com. Well, that's it for this edition of the official Plugged In podcast. To Paul Acey, Meredith Whitmore, Steve Isaac, and Adam Holtz, thanks for being here. We also appreciate the hard work of our producer, Dave Salkeld, and the support of our sponsor, Focus on the Family's own Focus Leadership Institute. Today's Christian music clip comes from Chris McClarney's recent EP entitled Introducing Chris McClarney. The song is Defender. Thanks so much for being with us, and be sure to join us right here again next week, because it's not just entertainment.
The official Plugged In podcast is a production of PluggedIn.com and Focus on the Family.